Lucian's voice was warm inside her mind. And what kind of female am I, Wolf?
A powerful, beautiful, caring one.
And? She prompted, knowing her mate had a subtle sense of humor that often caught her off guard, but delighted her like few things did anymore.
And a bit obstinate, bossy, perhaps, a tad conceited sometimes.
Okay, I think you've made your point, she interrupted him. Her words were clipped, but she knew he felt her humor. Okay, the suspense is killing me, Perry said out loud. Would one of you walking rugs tell me what you're obviously sensing that I can't?
Blood and death, Lucian growled.
Not to undermine your intelligence, love, but they are vampires. It's not like we expected to find juice boxes and cotton candy.
Either this coven is hundreds strong or they are simply just killing in large numbers, Dylan added.
It's young, Dalton said quietly.
Perry turned to look at him.
What's young?
She watched as his eyes grew brighter with his wolf.
The blood,
he answered.
It is young and full of innocence.
Perry's stomach dropped to her feet as his words registered. Young blood, innocent blood, meant children. Children were sacred to the Canis Lupus. Their females did not often bear more than one child in their long life, and if there wasn't a healer in their pack, it wasn't uncommon for the female to lose the child. Children were few and far between for the wolves, and she'd watched them over the centuries weep over many a lost little one. If the vampires were targeting children, especially in large numbers, Perry might not be able to keep the wolves at bay. In fact, she had a feeling Dylan would be on the phone with Vassal, the Romanian Pack Alpha, and most powerful Canis Lupus alive, as soon as they were back above ground. When Vassal found out about this, heads would roll, lots of heads. She wouldn't put it past the Alpha to try to eradicate the world of vampires once and for all. Perry turned to face all of the males. Her eyes narrowed as she saw that all three of them were barely holding their wolves in check.
Let me remind you that we are here for information. If you rip their throats out, we will not get any information. If you tear their heads off, we will not get any information. If you pull their fangs out and relieve them of their tongues, we will not get any information. Do you see a pattern here?
So we can break their legs, Dylan said in a guttural voice.
And then rip them off, Dalton snarled.
Their arms can be next. They don't need arms to speak, Lucian added.
Perry pinched the bridge of her nose and clamped her eyes closed. She had known this little visit was going to be a risky maneuver, but she hadn't realized how risky. Now, what she needed to decide, and quickly, was whether or not the risk was worth it. Hating to do it, she built up a wall in her thoughts, shutting Lucian out of that place. He hated when she used her power on him, but she didn't see any other way to get through the coming encounter without the wolves bathing in vampire blood. She'd done many things in the past to keep the wolves under control when she deemed it necessary, and it never made them happy. Granted, by the time she released them from her spells, she was usually long gone. She wasn't stupid, but now she was beginning to question her sense of self-preservation.
"What are you up to, Perzada?"
her mate's voice rumbled in her head. She heard the disapproval and suspicion in his tone. She couldn't let the fact that she really didn't like disappointing him get in the way of keeping him safe. Lucian might be possessive and protective of her, but she was every bit as possessive and protective of him. The intimacy of their bond tested her resolve, so she answered him out loud.
"Nothing you need to be concerned about."
"Perzada."
He drew her name out in low warning. She huffed.
"Oh, fine. I'm not up to anything. I was just thinking."
"About?"
he prompted.
"About children. I guess this,"
she motioned down the tunnel, indicating the coming confrontation,
"just has me thinking about crumb catchers and having them with you. And if we have them, how many do we have? Should we have a whole herd? But then I thought, no, it wouldn't be a herd, it would be a pack. And if we had a whole pack, does that mean we would become our own pack and call ourselves the Fairy Realm Pack? And then I ended up back at how many of the little dirt magnets should we have?"
Lucian's eyes had widened gradually as she had barreled forward. She inwardly counted to herself. 3, 2, 1. And there it was, the question she knew he'd ask first.
You really want a pack of pups?
No, not really, but I've successfully gotten your mind and wolf thinking about babies, and, by default, baby-making. Now, let's go before I have to come up with some other sentimental crap to distract you with.
She turned back in the direction they were headed and started forward. Perry heard Dylan let out a low whistle.
Brother, you've got your hands full, he chuckled. For so long, my existence was bleak and dull, as though there was no color in the world. Then the great Luna gave me Perizada. I will take her tantrums, rude comments, and idle threats to turn me into a handbag, because she brought color back into my dull life. I am sure never to be bored again.
Lucian's words filled Perry with a warmth and security she'd never even realized she had been lacking until he'd come into her life. She knew she drove him and his wolf batshit crazy with worry, but he never tried to change her. Her mate accepted her as she was, and because of that, Perry was able to be vulnerable with him. Lucian was the only person that would see her crumble when it all got too heavy. He would be the only shoulder she would lean on, the only hand allowed to comfort her, and the only wolf that could make her feel safe. Even with all of those feelings running through her, she didn't change her plan. If she had to bind her wolf and the others in order to get them out of the coven, she would do it in a heartbeat. Dylan had asked why she didn't just flash them directly to the vampire's location. She'd pointed out that when something surprised a predator, that something often didn't live. Perry felt Lucian's presence before she saw him join her from the corner of her eye. He reached over and took her hand, and his love immediately enveloped her. She would realize later that his action had allowed her to keep him from charging forward when they rounded a sharp corner and stepped into a large circular room. Perry immediately threw out her other hand and cast an invisible barrier at the same time Dylan, Dalton, and Lucian lunged forward. They bounced off of the shield, snarling and cursing. But instead of staying away from the invisible wall, they began punching at the offending obstacle. All three males were being controlled by their beasts. The need of the dominant wolves to protect the innocent had completely benched their human halves as they took over. Perry understood their rage. She herself was fighting back the need to destroy every filthy life drainer in front of her. The red splashes across the walls and floor looked as though an artist had dipped a large brush in red paint and recklessly slung it around. There was no pattern to the stains. They were spread out all over the chamber, large and small splatters covering every surface. Movement to her right had her eyes focusing on the beings in the room instead of the evidence of their carnage. There were at least 40 vampires, some lounging lazily, looking like overstuffed cats. Others were standing rigid, staring at them, their lips pulled back in snarls, with large fangs visible even from where she stood. Perry wasn't impressed. Suddenly all of their heads turned in unison as though they were connected by an invisible string that had been tugged. Perry's gaze followed the vampires, and she watched as a man and woman stepped out of the shadows of another opening. Their skin was pale and waxy in appearance, and dark circles cradled their bloodshot eyes. From the stance they took, shoulders back, chin up, haughty expressions attempting to intimidate, she guessed that these must be the leaders of the coven. Perry had brought the wolves to this particular coven because of rumors, whispered rumors, in the supernatural world about these two. Apparently these two had become aggressive in their leadership. The coven had become more and more bloodthirsty under their watch. Their hunts were getting out of control. She figured they could kill two vamps with one stone and remind them that they were far from being at the top of the supernatural food chain. In the process, she could see what they knew about Vulcan, if anything. Perry held their hostile stares with one of her own, and when a smirk emerged on the male's lips, she felt her gut tighten. He looked like a cat with his paws clamped over a little bird enjoying the victory of his hunt before devouring it. It was a look she loathed on anyone's face. He turned and motioned for whoever was behind him to come forward, and then pointed to the center of the room. As they stepped out of the shadows, obeying his silent command, Perry felt bile rise in her throat. Her heart hammered painfully in her chest, and her power surged in response to her emotions. She would have fallen to the ground had Lucian not caught her.
No, 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 no,
The words were breathless as she spoke, as though they were being pulled out of her. She wanted to close her eyes, wishing she could unsee what was before them, but she also couldn't look away. Perry felt the tears on her cheeks, but she didn't attempt to wipe them away. She let them fall, dedicating each one to those who had fallen victim to the monsters. The next words were resolute. She'd like to say that it was an out-of-control reaction. That would be a lie. This was calm, cold, and calculated. There would be no later regrets, remorse, or second thoughts. She didn't speak the words out loud because she didn't know if her voice would even work. So instead, she opened the bond fully and implored her mate.
Kill them. Rip them limb from limb, and make their throat the last thing you take, so that they feel the entire assault. Then rip out their fangs. The vampires have overstayed their time on Earth. We are going to send a message to all of their kind. No mercy, no exceptions. They have pissed off the wrong Fae.
Jewel knew that it was probably essential for her survival to humor Vulcan, and that had been her plan. But as she stared at the wild gleam in the evil Fae's eyes, she second-guessed her decision. She took several deep breaths as she stood up from the bed. Her mind began to do what it did best, and search out the facts. She tried to remember what she'd read about psychopaths and sociopaths. She remembered reading an article that explained the common misconception among most people that they were the same mental disorder. The article said that even many experts use the terms interchangeably when, in fact, there are clear differences. A sociopath isn't born with a mental disorder, but rather becomes unstable based upon childhood experiences, commonly including a lack of love and nurture. A psychopath, on the other hand, actually has an underdevelopment in the area of the brain where emotions originate. Sociopaths are usually uneducated, antisocial, and poor. Meanwhile, psychopaths are often very educated, successful, and able to mimic emotions so well that they lead regular lives, never arousing suspicions as to their true nature. Jewel looked at Vulcan and wondered if a Fae, a supernatural being, could be a psychopath. He definitely wasn't antisocial or uneducated, so sociopath was out. As he walked over to her, she fought the urge to step back from him. He reached up and trailed a finger down her cheek. His eyes were dancing with eagerness, and his mouth was pulled up in a wicked grin. "Definitely a psychopath," she decided. His hand dropped from her face and landed on her shoulder. Slowly, he trailed it down her arm and then moved it to her stomach. Jewel tensed. She'd never been touched by a man. Well, other than Dalton, but his touch wasn't slimy feeling like this. Vulcan's hand on her was nausea-inducing. He muttered something under his breath, and she felt his hand begin to warm. She sucked in a deep breath.
"What are you doing?"
she asked, attempting to keep the tremble from her voice. He let out a curse when he finally released her. The excitement had dimmed a bit as he looked down at her.
"You humans and your cycles," he grumbled. "When was your last blood?"
Jewel recognized the antiquated reference to a woman's menstrual cycle. She'd seen it called the same thing in old books. While reading it, the reference didn't seem offensive, but coming from Vulcan's mouth, it sounded vulgar. She decided the best way to handle this and not fall prey to her emotions was from a matter-of-fact medical point of view.
"I just finished a cycle. It will be another 28 days until my next."
The look on Vulcan's face told her that he hadn't been expecting her to be so forthcoming about it. Little did he know that stating the facts out loud not only made her feel in control, but also made her realize that she couldn't get pregnant right away. She had a reprieve from the coming activities, at least for a little while. Maybe in that time frame she could figure out a way to destroy Vulcan and free herself.
"Well, I suppose your lessons will have to begin first. We will get to the other once you're fertile."
Jewel nodded as though she had been a participant in his schemes rather than his prisoner. There was something powerful in deciding that she wasn't going to be a victim.
"Are you ready to learn what real magic is and just how powerful it can be?"
Vulcan took her hand in his. She ignored the feeling of having a snake wrapping around her, threatening to squeeze the life out of her.
"So the magic that Perry wields isn't real?" she asked.
"Oh, it is real enough, but it is weak. Come."
He pulled her behind him, leaving the room where she'd been confined. She noticed that the walls around her were stone, as was the floor beneath her feet. She was in a castle, an old castle. Her mind searched quickly for what that information could tell her. There were no true castles in the United States, only manors built in a Gothic style to make them look like castles. Vulcan didn't strike her as the type to accept a substitute, so she could most likely rule out the whole of North America. Vulcan spoke again, snapping her attention back to him.
"First, you need to learn about the essence of the magic, where it comes from and how it is maintained."
Her eyes widened at the statement. He glanced back at her.
"Surprised? Magic isn't something that just is. It has to be nurtured by those who have it living inside of them. And supernatural beings feed off of each other. When supernaturals gather together, each of them individually becomes stronger. The human realm used to have much more power in it. Before..."
He paused, and his feet had stopped moving. His eyes took on that faraway look that said a person was remembering. "Before..." she prompted. Would some find it strange that she was engaging her captor? Yes, probably. But Jewel reasoned that learning as much as possible was her only key to escaping. Also, she was just too dang curious for her own good. The High Fae shook his head and resurfaced to the present.
"Before the Fae killed all of the witches, before the werewolves warred with one another, before the gypsy healers suddenly disappeared, and before my people slithered back to their realm taking all of their power with them, the magic in the human world is dying."
"What does that mean?"
Something about the ominous way he said the words told her that this death was going to have serious repercussions.
"It means that any magical being, one that has any innate magical ability inside it, will not be able to survive in this realm. They will be forced to retreat to a supernatural realm."
Jewel felt like a heavy rock had been dropped into her stomach. Dalton was one such as that. He was a supernatural being with magic dwelling in him. The thought of him no longer existing in her world was earth-shattering. Vulcan once again began walking. His steps were completely silent, which made Jewel's steps sound like a herd of elephants parading along behind him. They made several turns, and she was being diligent to memorize the path they were taking, mentally giving herself markers to recall should she find a way to escape. The irony of looking for a way to escape after having purposefully gotten herself caught didn't escape her. Finally, they stopped in front of large wooden double doors. The wood looked to be in surprisingly good condition, considering she guessed that the castle had to be a couple of centuries or more old. Her captor let go of her hand and pushed the double doors open. He motioned for her to follow him as he stepped into a large, round room. The space was lit by evenly separated torches on the wall. The flames cast a sinister glow in the room, making her feel as though she was walking into hell itself. She crossed over the threshold, and halfway expected the doors to slam behind her, ending with the clicking of a lock. But nothing so dramatic happened.
"What do you think?"
Vulcan asked as he waved his hand in an arc, inviting her to look at her surroundings. Jewel turned in a slow circle. She took note of an old bookshelf resting against a stone wall. The books it contained appeared about as ancient as the castle itself. Her gaze slipped to a large round table sitting beside the shelf. There were other books strewn haphazardly across the table. Some books were lying open as though the person who had been reading them had been frantically flipping their pages and then tossing them aside. Vulcan cleared his throat and she jerked her eyes away from the table. Jewel continued to turn. Aside from the table and bookshelf, there were a couple of well-worn wooden chairs standing sentinel in front of a stone fireplace on the left side of the room. As she watched, the fireplace suddenly erupted with bright flames. She glanced over at Vulcan, who was lowering his outstretched arm.
"That is nothing compared to what I will teach you,"
he told her. Then he clapped his hands together and rubbed them eagerly.
"Let us begin. Come."
Vulcan waved her over. Jewel walked closer until she was a few feet away from the Fae. She hated that there was a small amount of adrenaline running through her veins, knowing she was about to learn about magic. She only wished it wasn't under the current circumstances.
"Every being has a core," he began. "A normal human's core contains a soul and nothing else. Supernatural beings are different. Their core contains their soul, but also their magic. This magic is like a flame that burns continuously, a pilot light that is constantly waiting to be blown into a blazing inferno. When we draw on our magic, it's comparable to gasoline being poured on a fire."
"Can the flame be extinguished?" Jewel asked.
"Yes, because the flame does not burn on its own. I mentioned that magic strengthens when other supernaturals are around. These other beings act much like oxygen, being slowly, endlessly fed to the fire. If given in a slow, steady stream of air, the fire doesn't grow, but the flame is simply maintained."
"Do all the supernaturals have the same magic inside of them?"
Vulcan
appeared deep in thought, and slowly shook his head.
"All of our magic is fundamentally the same."
He waved both hands in a circle around him, as if indicating a host of invisible supernatural beings.
"Fae, werewolves, pixies, vampires, you name it. But there is one supernatural being whose magic is different. These beings are different because they were not born of magic. No, these beings have magic given them directly from the Great Luna. Their power resides in their cores, yes, but it also flows inside their veins. It saturates their cells."
"Gypsy healers,"
Jewel practically spoke in a whisper.
"Correct,"
Vulcan confirmed.
"Gypsy healers have power in their blood that no other supernatural being has."
"What power?"
She breathed the question. Damn her curiosity, she thought to herself. She kept telling herself she wouldn't ask more questions, that she would only listen and respond when spoken to. For some reason, her mouth had a mind of its own.
"The power to create."
His voice took on a reverent quality as he spoke.
"She can use her blood to literally create other supernatural beings."
Jewel's eyes narrowed.
"But that's not what the power is supposed to be used for. The Great Luna didn't intend for the healers to be creators. She designed us to be shamans for her wolves. She designed me to use the magic she infused in me only for good. You want to take something good and pure and twist it into evil and use that evil against innocence."
Jewel forced her mouth to close, though she had more she could have said on the subject. As it was, she was worried she might have already pushed too hard. To her surprise, Vulcan just shrugged. He didn't seem offended in the least by her accusations.
"I hope you don't think to appeal to my emotions."
He sounded amused. Jewel had to bite her tongue because it ticked her off that he could be so flippant about hurting others. She supposed, as he'd been talking to her, teaching her, she'd pushed aside the fact that he was a murderer, traitor, and utterly malevolent. But now those attributes of the High Fae came rushing back to the forefront of her mind.
"Let's get back to the lesson,"
Vulcan said, as though talking to a class of students and not his prisoner.
"As I was saying, gypsy healers can create. Your blood mixed with my own creates something very different than what your blood could create on its own."
The Fae looked at her, obviously expecting some reaction. Jewel sat silent for several moments, contemplating.
"Since a healer wasn't born with magic in her core, could the flame be extinguished without killing the host?"
Vulcan's sharp eyes snapped to hers.
"I do not know, and you are not going to find out."
Touchy-touchy, she thought.
Before Jewel had time to react, Vulcan had pulled a knife and slashed a small cut across her forearm. She swallowed down the gasp from the pain and then fought the urge to vomit, as the cut brought back the memories of the time she'd been magically bound to an altar while Perry's evil sister had cut her again and again, all the while drinking her blood. Vulcan had just added to her already numerous scars, each a silent reminder of the horror she'd endured. When she opened her eyes, she saw a stone basin sitting on the table where a book had been pushed aside. A small pool of red sat in the bowl, and, seeing as there was no cut on Vulcan, the blood had to be her own. He handed her a piece of gauze, which she pressed over the cut. Vulcan stood muttering under his breath as he held his hands over the basin. Quick as a snake, he slashed his own hand and allowed his blood to mix with hers. Though the blood was mixing in the stone basin, completely away from her, she still felt violated. There was something strangely intimate about the process. Trying to distract herself, she asked,
"So is the lesson over?"
Vulcan said a few more words and then turned to look at her.
"No, this is your first practical lesson. You should pay attention. This will be very important to you. You see, the bonds between the Canis Lupus are, in essence, powerful blood bonds. Hence the need for the whole 'you bite me, I bite you' blood rite ceremony the wolves so cherish. Because the bond is powered by blood, the bond can be broken by dark blood magic. The wielder of the magic must be stronger than the bonded pair, and use his own blood in the process. But here is the important part for you. There is a difference between breaking the bond of two normal Canis Lupus and breaking the bond between a Canis Lupus and a gypsy healer. Had you spent more time with your new friends, you would know that a broken bond between two normal wolves can be repaired, with the aid of a gypsy healer, no less. Such a blessing you are to your newfound friends."
At this, a wicked smile spread across the High Fae's face. His eyes flashed, and Jewel shivered as she sensed a predator staring at her.
"But the cross of a gypsy healer, well, it is a tough one to bear, because unlike your furry friends, the bond between a healer and a wolf can be broken permanently,"
he finished in a near whisper. If Jewel had ever wondered what it would be like to drown while having her heart ripped out at the same time, she had a feeling she now knew. Just as her lungs seized up, cutting off her oxygen, her heart squeezed painfully in her chest. She felt as though someone was reaching into her chest cavity, wrapping their hand around her pounding heart, and squeezing while pulling at the same time. Just when she was sure she would pass out from the pain, there was a final sharp tug, and then nothing. She felt absolutely nothing. Up until that point, she hadn't been able to feel or communicate with Dalton, but somehow she'd known that he was still there. While Vulcan had held her under his spell, maintaining the illusion that Dalton was cut off from her, she'd felt him out there, like a candle in the darkness, just out of her reach. But this was no illusion. The candle was gone, snuffed out in an instant. Now all she could feel was darkness. Jewel felt the cold stone beneath her knees, and that was when she realized she'd fallen to the ground. Her hands clenched into fists so tightly that she felt her fingers leaving impressions in her palms. She slammed them again and again against the stone floor. Tears welled up in her eyes until they overflowed, pouring down her cheeks. Leaning forward, a silent scream welled up in her throat, but there was no air for sound. For a short time, Jewel had experienced a small glimpse of what the characters in her books felt. She'd literally felt Dalton's emotions for her, felt his adoration, his respect, his admiration, his passion and love. She could have had that for a very, very long time. But now it was gone, and it would never be hers again. It's not that her life was horribly unbearable before Dalton, but to have experienced a supernatural bond to a man who was designed just for her and her for him, and then lose him, was a level of disappointment she'd yet to experience, and one she never wanted to endure again. Jewel had finally felt as though she had a purpose and someone to share it with, but like smoke being blown away from a snuffed-out flame, dispersing until it was no longer visible, that future and all that would have come with it was gone. Chapter 3.
She's gone. I am alone. There is nothing left.
Dalton. As if in a trance, seemingly oblivious to the threats all around them, vampire after vampire marched forward to the middle of the room, each carrying a small body, and deposited the lifeless form of a human boy or girl onto an ever-growing pile. Once the reality of the scene had set, Dalton had let his wolf take over. The man lost all conscious thought as he phased. He only knew rage. The atrocity of their actions would be the last they would commit. They might have information on his mate's whereabouts, but even that vital information would not save them. From what little he already knew about his mate, he was sure that she would not want him to let those creatures continue to exist. That had been the first reason he'd unleashed his fury, giving in to the wolf's need to serve justice for the little ones. Children were to be cherished, and the vampires had destroyed them. The second reason was even more overwhelming. It was so overwhelming that he probably couldn't have stopped himself from phasing, even if he'd wanted to. Just as Perry removed the barrier and ordered the wolves to attack, Dalton felt an explosion of pressure in his chest. As he lunged, he felt that his abdomen was being torn apart, like raw meat being shredded. The breath was momentarily pulled from his lungs, and, as suddenly as it had hit, the pain was gone. She was gone. He knew immediately. There was no mistaking the feeling. There was no connection, no pull, not even the kind he felt toward her before he performed the blood rites. It was as if Jewel Stone had never been his mate. But she had been. She was his. She was his, and he didn't know if she had been killed or what had been done to destroy their bond so completely. His wolf seethed at the loss, and decided that the vampires would pay for more than just the lives of the precious little ones. They would experience a wolf who had nothing to lose. Teeth met flesh, and blood sprayed over his muzzle, coating his fur. There was no clear thought on Dalton's part. He simply ripped apart anything that got in his way. One after another, he tore off limbs, broke necks, and ripped heads from bodies. And with every kill, he felt himself let go a little bit more. He had never allowed his beast free rein. It was too dangerous because the darkness inside of him only grew with bloodlust. But without Jewel, it didn't matter. Nothing mattered. The darkness could swallow him whole for all he cared. After ripping the head off of the female vampire that had been standing with the leader of the coven, Dalton turned slowly, surveying the damage. Blood coated the floor and walls like paint. Body parts were strewn everywhere around the chamber. There wasn't a single limb left attached to a torso. Movement to his right caught his eye, and he turned, pulling his lips back from his teeth. A snarl rose in his chest as he stared at the male vampire that had directed the parade of little bodies.
"This one should die slowly," his wolf told him.
Dalton agreed.
"Perhaps we can start with the belly. He can still live for a while without his intestines. We will just have to be careful not to sever the spine."
Yes, Dalton thought. Yes, this one would suffer greatly. But he knew that his control was not enough to drag out the monster's death. Unfortunately, his current prey's pain would end much too quickly. The vampire crouched down in a predatory stance, his body poised for attack. Dalton wanted to laugh. This one didn't have a chance in hell of leaving the death-filled room. He circled slowly as the vamp did the same. Deliberately, one step after another, while trying to avoid tripping over the slick debris on the ground, they both looked for the precise moment to attack. Dalton growled low, every tooth exposed, while the vampire hissed, his fingers extending into razor-sharp claws. As if in response to some audible signal that only they could hear, both of the predators leapt at once. They met in the center of the chamber in a flurry of fangs and claws. The fight was over as quickly as it had begun. The vampire, who was used to preying upon helpless children, was woefully unprepared to deal with a wolf as powerful as Dalton. The wolf lunged low, clamping down on the vampire's upper thigh. The creature screamed in agony as Dalton lifted his head and slammed the vampire down onto his back. Dalton didn't even pause as he leapt up onto the monster, pinning him to the ground with his powerful forepaws. He tore into the man's abdomen, and the screams only fueled his hunger. Teeth and claws dug into flesh over and over again, until the screams were gone, and his prey's body went slack. It was over. Much too quickly, he destroyed his foe. Dalton looked up from his latest kill, looking for more. His eyes landed on two other wolves and a fey woman. She was powerful. She would be a good fight. Her eyes met his in a clear challenge.
More blood, more death, until we can't feel anymore. Until we can't feel anything. Not pain, not pleasure, nothing.
His wolf felt the effect of the missing bond, the effect of their mate being taken so completely away from them. Only in death could such a thing be possible. There was no other explanation.
We will follow her. Alpha will eventually take us down.
Images of carnage, of death and chaos, flowed into the man from the wolf.
Yes, Dalton agreed as he stalked towards the female, who was locked with his gaze.
A deep growl rumbled from the huge white wolf as it stepped forward in front of the Fae.
Mates, his wolf snarled, being reminded of what they no longer had.
That was all it took. He lunged, teeth bared, ready to sink them into her neck. Dalton knew the moment his life was forfeited as he laid in his human form crushed beneath two seething males.
He bit me! First I had to watch those sick bloodsuckers flaunt the bodies of little children they'd killed. Then I didn't even get to kill any of the sick bloodsuckers because he killed them all. And then I was bitten by the same damn wolf that took away my kills.
Parizada practically roared.
He's dead. He's worse than dead. Get out of the way, Lucian. Dylan, stay there and die with him if you want. Frankly, I don't give a damn.
Parizada,
Lucian's deep voice rumbled.
Do not Parizada me, she snapped at her mate. That damn wolf lost his shit and attacked me. We all know what that means. He's feral. He will continue to kill until he's destroyed.
Think about what that means, love,
Lucian said with the patience of a saint.
He is a male that has completed the blood rites. If she was dead, then he should be too. Maybe we need to get a little more information on what's going on before executing a packmate.
Just so you know, I hate it when you are rational and calm.
Would you rather I rant and rave?
Lucian asked without any humor in his voice.
No, that's my job. It's your job to be rational and calm so I can have one more thing to be pissed off about. Now, let him up so we can get our answers.
We're going to release you. Do not attack.
Dylan's voice wrapped around him as the Alpha Command took over through the pack magic. Dalton nodded. They let him go and he slowly sat up. A pair of sweats landed at his feet. He snatched them up, realizing that his Alpha and Lucian were already slipping into their own clothes. He got them on and was reseated in less than a minute. His hands shook, and his head pounded as he attempted to keep his wolf in check.
"What happened, Dalton?"
Dylan asked as he sat down across from him. His legs were bent in front of him with his forearms resting on his knees. His posture was casual, but he was watching Dalton intently, like a hawk sitting on a limb watching a scurrying mouse.
"My mate is dead."
The words tasted like sandpaper in his mouth. They were four words that he never imagined he would ever have to say.
"I call BS," Perry bit out. "The bond being broken keeps you from knowing if she's dead. Obviously, if the bond were intact, you'd be dead too, and I wouldn't have to worry about getting my hands dirty with your murder. News flash, Flea Motel, you aren't dead. With the bond broken, how can you possibly know that she's dead?"
Dalton raised his head and looked up at the High Fae, who stood with her hands crossed in front of her. Normally, he would have let her insults slide, but he didn't care if she killed him.
"I know it might be hard for your inflated ego to imagine, but perhaps, Parizada of the Fae, you do not know everything. She was my mate. The bond was between us, and I felt the absence of it for the past day and a half. But I knew she was still there. I could sense her out there somewhere. But what I feel now is more absolute. The bond isn't just gone. It's not like the blood rite's magic has been severed. If that were the case, then the pull between us would still be there. But now there is nothing. My mind knows that she was once mine, but my emotions tell me that there is nothing between us. There's no ache, no desire, nothing telling me that she's my other half, not anymore. What could cause that other than her death? You have an answer for everything, so what's your answer to that, female?
She didn't answer, just stood there looking at him like he'd just explained the theory behind quantum physics.
Finally, the all-knowing High Fae has been struck dumb.
Careful, Beta, Lucian warned.
When Perry finally spoke, she began to pace back and forth in front of them. What does your wolf feel? When Dalton didn't answer, she stopped in front of him and met his eyes. Her power pulsed in the air, causing it to hum with electricity. Then she did something he'd never even knew was possible.
Speak, wolf!
She summoned his wolf.
Perizzata,
Dylan growled. Dalton knew why his alpha was enraged. This Fae, someone who was not his alpha, not his mate, not even his species, held the ability to call forth his beast. He couldn't fight the command. It was given as sure as if she was his own alpha. He felt his wolf take over, and the man could only watch.
I am as bothered by this as you, he sensed from his wolf.
Then the wolf gazed out from the eyes of the human.
What am I to speak, female?
Dalton's wolf watched her carefully. He had known she was powerful, but this was dangerous.
How did you feel about the bond being broken between you and Jewel? Little dove, he rumbled affectionately. She is mine.
So you don't think she's dead? He growled.
I do not know. My human initially felt nothing for her. But he is remembering that it's her, not the bond, that caused his love. We aren't connected, but that changes nothing. She is mine. I will find her, even if all I find is her body. I will kill anyone who gets in my way.
Perry stood staring at the beast that had not only bitten her, but was now basically letting her and the other two males know that he wasn't about to submit. She had no doubt that Dalton's wolf would indeed kill anyone who attempted to keep him from searching for his mate, which would quite certainly lead to his own death, if not by Dylan's hand, then by Lucian's. Damn stubborn wolves, Perry thought to herself. But as she continued to stare at him, she looked past the determination in the wolf's eyes and saw the pain. He was hurting. Perry didn't know why it hit her so hard, but like a punch to the chest, the anguish in the beast's eyes crashed into her. Dalton had said that Jewel was dead. He felt no pull towards her, and she had to admit that it was a pretty convincing argument in favor of her life being indeed snuffed out. But that just wasn't acceptable to Perry. Healers did not die on her watch. It was something she could not abide, and that wasn't about to change now just because Vulcan and his crazy-ass self had stepped into the picture. Perry turned and looked at her mate, who had already started to walk towards her.
I'll just be a minute.
She flashed, just as he lunged for her. Lucian would be pissed at her for leaving him, but she didn't have time to argue with him. She'd just have to give him an extra long belly scratch later.
As much as my wolf loves a good belly scratch, he loves knowing you're safe even more. When are you going to stop acting as though you aren't mated?
Lucian's voice was as patient as ever, but Perry knew he was truly upset with her.
I was single for thousands of years, Wolf. You can't expect me to suddenly just become Susie Homemaker. You know that is not what I am asking of you. I do not wish to change you. I simply want you to allow me to be by your side. You don't have to do any of this alone. Not anymore.
Perry appeared in the living room of her home and stood there, pinching the bridge of her nose. She seemed to be doing that human-like behavior more and more. She understood what Lucian was asking, and it was something she wanted as well. She just didn't know how to keep from acting without stopping to think about someone else.
Do what you need to do, Perizzata. I'm not going anywhere, and I realize that we have more important things to handle right now. I'm just asking you to attempt to see things from my perspective.
He slipped from her mind, leaving her alone.
Not alone, love. Never alone. Just giving you space.
Perry's heart clenched painfully in her chest as the love she felt for her wolf threatened to choke her. What she did to deserve a man so patient and loving, she didn't know, but she was unbelievably grateful that the great Luna had seen fit to put them together. She knew Lucien was right. She needed to make more of an effort to act as a team and less as a lone ranger. Perry's attention was drawn from her relationship woes by the sound of a door opening and closing behind her. She turned to see 7 very ticked-off-looking male Canis Lupus glaring at her. "What's happening now?" Perry wasn't really sure she wanted to know the answer. What she really wanted to do was tell them to go lick themselves, because she had more important things to do than pat their heads and tell them all would be well. But that was before Kale spoke.
"Costin Gustavo and the 2 lasses are gone."
Kale's Irish accent had grown thick with his irritation.
"Gone? As in gone, gone?"
Perry was pretty sure she'd never sounded more like an idiot. But the shock of Kale's declaration had momentarily, and much to her chagrin for the second time that day, struck her dumb.
"Where'd they go?"
When none of them answered, Perry narrowed her eyes on them. She met each of their gazes until finally landing on Antonio, Gustavo's beta.
"Do you have any idea where they might have gone?"
Perry asked him, and before he could answer, she held up her hand.
"And please don't lie to me. My patience is at an all-time low, and it really won't take much to make me go back on my decision not to turn any wolf who annoys me into a new rug." "Why a rug, you ask?" "Because there is nothing so therapeutic as wiping my feet on the beast dumb enough to not take my threat seriously. Now," she waved her hand, "please answer the question. Do you, Antonio, have any idea where your alpha might have trotted off to?"
The other males turned to look at the beta, their face tight with frustration. Antonio shifted and took a subtle step away from the group. Perry realized that the beta did indeed know something and was a little worried as to how the others were going to react. She reached out her hand and muttered a few words. She nearly laughed at the shocked expressions of the males as their bodies went rigid.
"You can answer the question without fear of them going postal on you, Wolf," Perry told them. "They can't move, not until I release them."
"My alpha is going to kill me,"
Antonio breathed out as his shoulders slumped just a little.
"Gustavo has been feeling the pull of his true mate. It was getting stronger, and he mentioned that he thought that something was amiss with her.
He didn't tell me exactly that he was going to go and try and find her, but I didn't get the impression that he was going to wait around much longer."
Perry mentally smacked herself in the forehead. She was pretty sure that the wolves were determined to test her until she finally snapped.
"Okay," she mumbled as she began to pace. "Okay, so Gustavo must have convinced Costin to take him to the Pixie Realm, and Sally, being the semi-smart female that she is, took Kara with them so that she wouldn't be left here with a bunch of unmated males. So the question is, how long have they been gone? If it hasn't been very long, then they are still in the forest."
"We realized they were gone a couple of hours ago," Antonio told her.
So they were definitely still in the forest. Making her decision, Perry snapped her fingers, causing the gaze of all the wolves to fall on her.
"I'm going to release you. Do not retaliate against Antonio. He has no control of his alpha and, therefore, is not responsible for Gustavo's actions. If I find out that you have taken action against the beta because you're all pissed off that you didn't think to go after one of the females yourselves, then I will give you the worst case of jock itch, crabs, and scabies known to man, complete with flea infestation. And I'll throw in some lice, so that no itching bug gets its feelings hurt from being left out."
She waited a few heartbeats, letting her threats set in before releasing them from the binding.
"What are you going to do?"
Kale asked as he rolled his shoulders. Perry imagined if he'd been in his wolf skin, he would have given himself a good shake to rid himself of the effects of her magic.
"Well, I had come to let Costin know that I will be needing all of your help very soon, but seeing as how he has taken his happy butt on a little unauthorized adventure, I will tell you all instead. We attempted to get information on Vulcan from the vampires."
Low growls filled the room at the mention of the bloodsuckers.
The vampires haven't crawled out of their holes for a very long time. Why would you think they knew anything? Nick spoke up. Perry couldn't help but notice that the usually easygoing Beta looked agitated.
Vulcan is powerful and growing stronger. If there are even whispers of this, any and all evil beings, no matter the form, will seek him out. So, I am simply following the proverbial trail of wicked, nasty beings. That said, with our first stop, we had some complications.
What kind of complications? Drayden, the Canadian Alpha, asked.
The kind that involves an entire coven being destroyed.
Their eyes widened, but Perry didn't entertain their curiosity. She didn't have time to relate the whole Dalton losing his cool story.
I'm going to have to seek out some other source of information to see if I can find some clue, any clue, as to where Vulcan might be holed up. Once I have that information, I will need you bloodhounds to be ready to hunt.
We will be ready.
Kale spoke for the group, though the others nodded in agreement. Perry gave her own nod in return, and began to flash with the intention of going to the forest, but just before she disappeared, she felt the residual magic of one of her own.
"Damn it, Alston," she grumbled, and changed her direction to the pixie realm instead.
It was apparent to her in that moment that her threats were no longer enough. If she wanted the people under her protection to listen to her, she was going to have to remind them that she was truly capable of the things of which she boasted. Too bad for Coston that he just happened to be the most recent dumbbutt to cross her.
Nick stood silently with the rest of the wolves as they stared at the place Perry had just occupied. One by one they dispersed. Each of them seemed to be lost in his own thoughts. Nick's mind was a mess. The minute he'd realized Kara was gone, his wolf had been pacing restlessly inside of him. He was angry. He was angry at Coston, Sally, and Gustavo for thinking they had the right to take her without telling him. Them, he amended. He continued to tell himself it was because she was so young that he was worried about her. 16, he told himself for the 1,000th time. Regardless of her age or his lack of understanding, what he felt was not going away. She was young, she was human, and she was a gypsy healer. Kara needed his protection.
No, he muttered. She needs our protection. All of us were brought to protect them.
Even as he said the words out loud, his wolf balked.
"The others don't give us such concern," the beast told him.
He couldn't deny the wolf's words, but he wasn't going to allow himself to even take a step toward the road that his beast wanted to go. She was a kid, plain and simple. He had to look at her as simply a packmate to protect.
"She won't be 16 forever," his wolf taunted.
No, she wouldn't be, and the fact that he was happy about that made him feel like a slime ball. He didn't know if Kara was his. She was too young for the bond to form. What he did know was that for whatever reason, he felt it was his job to keep her safe. He left Parazada's home and walked out toward the field where he had found her that night months ago. Nick felt close to her when he was there. The sun was beginning to set and the fall air was growing cooler. He walked in a circle, his hand running lazily over the tall grass. Taking deep breaths, he attempted to cool the burning anger inside. When Kara had been close, it had been bearable to be unsure of her place in his life. But with her out of his reach and the uncertainty of whether or not she was his true mate, he was quickly becoming less and less sufferable.
"Did you know that worrying does absolutely nothing to change the circumstances that cause the worry?"
Nick turned at the sound of her voice and bowed his head.
"Great Luna," he said, dropping to one knee. He was immediately reminded of the day he'd watched Kara plead with the goddess to let her take Jewel's place, and it only deepened the ache inside of him.
"What troubles you, child of mine?" she asked him.
Nick could hear the genuine concern in her voice, and he was humbled by it.
"I am worried about Kara."
He didn't elaborate on who Kara was. The Great Luna, after all, was well aware of all of her children. The gypsy healers were no exception.
"I'm confused about her as well."
"You care for her?"
"She's only 16, he added quickly.
17, actually. She had a birthday, but told no one.
The goddess sounded intrigued by Kara's actions. Nick's head rose slightly, but he waited until she told him to look at her.
Why? Why would she not tell anyone?
Kara's life has been a challenging one. There has never been a single birthday celebration in her life. Not one. To her, it's just another day.
The great Luna watched him intently. He wondered what she saw.
What am I to her?
Nick finally asked. He didn't know if the goddess would tell him anything, but he had to at least ask. Her eyes softened as she walked over to him and placed a hand on his shoulder.
You are whatever she needs you to be. Be it friend, protector, confidant. She will need you, Nicholas, Beta of the Canadian Pack. In the days to come, as darkness grows, she will need you.
Is she mine? Is she my true mate?
Nick had stood up before he even realized what he was doing as he asked the question that had been driving him crazy.
When the time comes, yes, she will be yours.
Nick's head fell forward, his chin nearly touching his chest. He squeezed his eyes shut and clenched his jaw at her declaration. He hadn't wanted to hope, hadn't wanted to give thought to the possibility of Kara being his mate, but now he had absolute confirmation.
Why have I felt drawn to her if she isn't of age? There aren't supposed to be mating signs until the females are 18, right?
He asked as he raised his head to once again look at his creator.
Circumstances often change necessities. It is necessary that the healers be protected. Who better to protect them than their true mates? I know your heart, child. I know you would never dishonor her. I trust you with one who has not yet come of age. She's close, and in many ways, because of her experiences, she is more mature than many adults. I also know that Kara has been alone for a very long time, and it's time for healing to begin. Not only in her, but in all of my healers. Help her heal, Nicholas. Help her become the healer she is meant to be, and she, in turn, will help you become the wolf I intend you to be.
With that command, she was gone. Her words absorbed into him, and the mission the great Luna set before him burrowed deep into his marrow and became his purpose. He would protect her. He would listen to her, laugh with her, bear her sorrow, and, if it came down to it, he would die for her. Kara, 17, orphan, gypsy healer, and his true mate. Kale sat on the bed in the upstairs room that held the scent of the one who belonged to him. It was all he had of her, just her scent. But that small detail was embedded in his mind, and he would be able to recognize her anywhere simply by her scent. But he wanted to know more. He wanted to know what color her hair was, her eyes, and her aura. Kale wanted to know what her laugh sounded like and what her skin felt like. He wanted to know everything about her. The growing ache inside of him was beginning to fester like a thorn buried deep in his paw. Their bond was strong already, though he still hadn't been able to reach out to her mind. He had tried many times, but he knew that, more than likely, he would have to be within a mile of her to be able to connect with her through their thoughts. It was frustrating as hell to be able to feel her, but be unable to touch her. Kale wondered how long he could hold out before he lost his sanity. He'd thought that it was bad, wondering if he'd ever meet his true mate, but actually knowing she was out there but being unable to do a damn thing about it was much, much worse.
"Is this driving you as crazy as it's driving me?"
he asked, speaking into the empty room. She couldn't hear him physically or mentally, but Kale couldn't stop himself from imagining what it would be like to have a conversation with her. He wondered what her voice sounded like. Was it smoky and sexy, or soft and peaceful? Did she have dimples or freckles? Was she tall or short, thin or curvy? Kale rubbed his face and growled in frustration. He was going to drive himself crazy if he continued to pine after her. He stood and walked toward the door. Just before he stepped out, he looked back at the bed that had been hers.
"We need her," his wolf murmured in his mind.
Kale agreed wholeheartedly.
Soon, he told his wolf, soon we will be with her.
Ciro reveled in the wind blowing through his fur as he ran. He'd shed his human skin and taken his wolf form after Perry had paid them a visit. He could tell the other males that felt as though they had a mate in the pixie realm were